everything that goes into things that you can't consciously think of or control yourself, that's all the subconscious mind at play. And that's why it's so powerful and so important that you get a hold of that.
Welcome to The One You Feed. Throughout time, great thinkers have recognized the importance of the thoughts we have. Quotes like garbage in, garbage out, or you are what you think ring true. And yet, for many of us, our thoughts don't strengthen or empower us. We tend toward negativity, self-pity, jealousy, or fear. We see what we don't have instead of what we do. We think things that hold us back and dampen our spirit. But it's not just about thinking. Our actions matter. It takes conscious, consistent, and creative effort to make a life worth living. This podcast is about how other people keep themselves moving in the right direction, how they feed their good wolf.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks for joining us. Our guest on this episode is Justin Stenstrom, a nationally acclaimed life coach, author, entrepreneur, and speaker. Justin is the founder of EliteManMagazine.com, the host of the Elite Man podcast, and the author of the book Giving Shy Guys Game.
If you value the content we put out each week, then we need your help. As the show has grown, so have our expenses and time commitment. Go to oneufeed.net/support and make a monthly donation. Our goal is to get to 5% of our listeners supporting the show. Please be part of the 5% that make a contribution and allow us to keep putting out these interviews and ideas. We really need your help to make the show sustainable and long-lasting. Again, that's oneufeed.net/support. Thank you in advance for your help.
And here's the interview with Justin Stenstrom.
Hi, Justin. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Eric. Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're a fellow podcaster. You have a podcast called The Elite Man Podcast, and you also have a magazine. So we'll jump into some of that here in a little bit, but let's start like we always do with the parable. There's a grandfather who's talking with his grandson. He says, "In life, there are two wolves inside us that are always at battle. One is a good wolf, which represents things like kindness and bravery and love. And the other is a bad wolf, which represents things like greed and hatred and fear." And the grandson stops and he thinks about it for a second and he looks up at his grandfather and he says, "Well, grandfather, which one wins?" And the grandfather says, "The one you feed." So I'd like to start off by asking you what that parable means to you in your life and in the work that you do.
To me, it means you have like this kind of fire going inside. It's almost like a, you know, a car engine. It's constantly going. If you control it, you know, you're running smooth. The car's great. Everything's great. It takes you places. You can get things done. You know, you get to and from work. You get to go, you know, travel different places with it. If you let the fire kind of take its toll on you or, you know, get out of control, it can take over. And that's kind of like what your thoughts are. Like you have negative thoughts throughout the day. You have, you know, thoughts that can dictate if you're feeling low, if you're feeling maybe down or depressed or anxious or worried all the time. And that can take its toll on you and cause things like depression or anxiety or panic problems. But if you can take control of your thoughts, the thoughts in your head, you can actually turn that into positive things like, you know, confidence, being bold, being decisive, being a leader, just different like positive emotions. So it's really just kind of how you control yourself. And, you know, there's this fire always going inside you, but if you can control that fire, you can use it to your advantage.
Excellent. One of the things that I saw when I was researching you was a lot of talk about NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. And that's been something that I have been interested in exploring on this show a little bit. So it sounds like that's something you've got a pretty deep immersion in.
Yeah, I've done a lot of NLP training and, you know, just read books on it and have used it in my own personal life to overcome a number of different problems. NLP and actually hypnosis are like the two big ones.
Yeah, well, let's talk about NLP, you know, what it is and how you've used it.
Yeah, so NLP is neuro-linguistic programming. It was a technique pioneered by John Grinder and Richard Bandler back in, I believe, the 70s. And these guys basically studied all of the major like psychological and mental programming and you know, doctors and researchers at the time. They took all these kind of different concepts and they also were actually big into hypnosis. So they studied guys like Milton Erickson, who was like the, you know, if anyone knows anything about hypnosis, he's like the father of hypnosis. Ericksonian hypnosis is still used today. It's one of the most popular methods of hypnosis. But they took like all these different kind of teachings and practices and put it all into one. And basically what it comes down to when you use NLP is, I mean, there's a number of different things, but it's basically using pictures, sounds, and images. And when you think about something, you visualize it in a picture. And sometimes it even has audio, like you use all your senses to visualize and imagine something, like, you know, an emotion. For say you have a fear, you know, you'd think of the fear and all the things that go into that. And all of a sudden it's a big picture. It's, you know, you see it, literally see the picture and taking actions and unfolding like in your mind. And that's what you kind of focus on. So if you're focusing on something negative, that picture is very large. You can hear it. It's very clear. It's vivid. And that's kind of the overrunning picture that goes on and on. And so that fear becomes like worse and worse because you're just kind of making it more vivid and more clear. And the gist of using NLP is replacing that bad picture, the vivid, you know, terrible picture of something happening with a positive one. So you can literally, like, there's different ways of doing it, but you literally can like shrink it down. You can like throw it away, like picture yourself like tossing it like a mile or miles away and it's like disappearing. You can then replace that with an even bigger picture of something positive happening. And it's literally just like training your mind to wipe out negative pictures, negative thoughts, negative audio, sensory sounds, and all that other stuff with positive ones, and just training yourself on continually doing it. And the more you do it, the more you get good at literally like this visualization technique, but the easier it becomes to change your emotions and to change your feelings into positive ones.
I'm always interested in things that stress positive thinking, you know, very strongly. What's the role of sort of acknowledging emotion and legitimate emotions and things that happen in your life that are challenging with also being positive and focusing on something like NLP? How do you balance those things in your life?
I guess it just comes down to the situation. Like there'll be times where beforehand, like I've used this in the past too. I've battled anxiety. I've battled panic attacks where I was getting them 3 to 4 times a week. I battled depression to the point where I was suicidal. And it was horrible for about 6 months in my life, like constantly every single day I was like thinking about suicide. I'll deal with it as it kind of comes to me, but I'm always sort of proactive with it. So being proactive with it means like doing these visualization techniques, these kind of NLP teachings, doing hypnosis regularly, where I'll have like, you know, the hypnosis CD or MP3 hypnosis. And, you know, I'll do that in the morning every couple times a month, just to kind of, because at this point, you know, I don't have any problems with anxiety or depression, but I'll kind of do it as like a maintenance thing. And back, you know, way back when I did have these problems, I would do it every single day as a maintenance thing. But on the other hand, when things like randomly pop up, when I'm faced with a new challenge, when I'm faced with, you know, some crazy fear, or I want to overcome something in the moment, I've actually learned that you can't really be proactive, obviously, in that situation. So what I've learned instead is to actually, a lot of the time, face these problems head on, like face these fears and tackle them and kind of face them head on without trying to avoid them or hide them or use anything else to kind of mask them. So it's kind of like two different techniques or two different processes at work here. There's like a proactive thing where I'm using like these things and kind of working on my subconscious mind and training myself in a way. But on the other hand, I've also kind of adapted this ability to tackle different fears, tackle different challenges head on and kind of have the courage to face them.
Now, does NLP suggest that a lot of what happens with us is happening subconsciously? And is NLP intended to address the subconscious?
That's an interesting question. I read a book by Richard Bandler actually a couple months ago, and he sort of reiterated what I thought all along, which is NLP isn't really meant to kind of figure out how all the problems came about, or, you know, the whole history of the problems, or like, you know, the diagnosis of it, or why you're getting the problems, are all kind of like the back channel work of the actual problem. It's very effective in actually just being a technique to cut the problem out, to knock it off. So if you get these problems, like NLP is a good way to start implementing. NLP would be a good way to start fighting them off and getting less of the problem. Like, it's great for fears, it's great for phobias, it's great for boosting your confidence, it's good for things like that. But as far as like the whole why you're getting the thing in the first place, it doesn't really address that as much. You'd probably want to, you know, talk to some like psychologist or some kind of professional if you're talking about like kind of deep rooted problems, if that answers your question.
Yep. So tell me about hypnosis. That's an interesting one. I haven't known very many people who have had a lot of success with hypnosis. I'm also not saying I've known any people who haven't. I just haven't talked to many people who've tried it. So tell me about your experience with it. Where did you start with it, and what was it able to help you do?
Yeah, I've been a huge fan of hypnosis probably now for close to a decade. And I'm a huge fan of it because it was the single, and I've tried basically everything under this. I'm a self-help kind of junkie, and I'll try things all the time, just random things that pop up. I'm always researching stuff, always on YouTube and, you know, reading books. But I've tried everything under the sun, especially back close to a decade now, where I was getting these major problems with depression, anxiety, panic attacks, et cetera. I was just throwing things at the wall and seeing what stuck. And as it turns out, hypnosis was the best thing that I threw at the wall and stuck. And it made the greatest impact in my life. So hypnosis was the single best technique for getting me out of that suicidal depression. And I would plug in, I mentioned a moment ago, like hypnosis is generally about 20 to 30 minutes a session. And you do it about once every day for 30 days or so. I mean, they'll say every couple days is okay, but I recommend doing it every single day to really program your subconscious mind. And for anyone who doesn't know, the subconscious mind is literally the most powerful part of the mind. So you have the conscious mind, which is basically like what you're thinking now, what you're, you know, we're having this conversation. This is like conscious work at play. We're thinking about what we're saying. We're talking, we're saying these words, and this is all conscious. But you know, you can't just like snap your fingers and say, if you're feeling down, if you're feeling depressed, you can't snap your fingers and say, you know, I want to be happy. I want to feel great. I want to be energized and excited and loving life. And unfortunately, you know, it doesn't work that way, because that's the conscious mind. That's what's happening right now and what you can think and what you can do. The subconscious mind, however, is the part of your mind that controls your feelings, your emotions, your unconscious bodily rhythms, like your heartbeat. It regulates your breathing when you don't think about your breathing. Everything that goes into things that you can't consciously think of or control yourself, that's all the subconscious mind at play. And that's why it's so powerful and so important that you get a hold of that. Hypnosis just so happens to be probably the most effective way to tap into the subconscious mind. So you get into a super relaxed state of mind. It's almost like a state between sleep and being conscious, like right now, like we're talking. It's that in-between state. So if you're sleeping, it's not really going to work. And if you're conscious right now, it's not really going to work either. So it gets you into like a very relaxed, like it's almost like a guided meditation, where if you've ever done any meditation, Eric, you have an understanding of kind of like that feeling of kind of being like at bliss, like no worries, no cares. You're just kind of like, you know, very, very comfortable, almost like you want to sleep, but you're not quite sleeping. That's like the state you want to be in for hypnosis. And you go in like this kind of, it's called like an induction, where they take you, the hypnotist, you know, you're listening, just listening to the hypnotist talk throughout, you know, the 20, 30 minutes. And again, he's putting you into like a relaxed state of mind, and he's putting you into the induction. So he takes you down to like this countdown from like 10, 9, 8, you know, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And then by the time you get to 1, you're in that hypnotic state, so to speak. And when you're in that hypnotic state, you're super, super relaxed. Like you're literally just about to go to sleep. And just like I said a moment ago, like in that super bliss kind of meditative state. But at that point, your subconscious mind, it's almost like the gates to your subconscious mind open up. And at that point, when they open up, the positive suggestions, like positive affirmations, positive suggestions, techniques and strategies that are outlined in the hypnosis session start to come out, and they start to train, like literally program your mind into having positive beliefs, positive feelings, positive emotions, and start to fix the areas in your life that you want to be fixed. So that could be confidence, that could be having problems with anxiety, that could be, like for me, it was depression. I was super, super depressed. So I was getting positive affirmations about being grateful for what I have, thinking of all the things in my life that I should, you know, be happy about that most people don't have, concentrating on that and just focusing on like all the good and all the happiness and joy in my life currently right now that I was overlooking. And so for 20 to 30 minutes a day, I was tapping into the subconscious mind, literally just flooding it with all these positive emotions. And after doing this for 3 to 4 weeks, those positive emotions started to really take shape in my life. And it sort of just like hacked into my subconscious mind and hacked into my feelings, which at the time were all, you know, negative and depressed feelings. And it tapped into that and literally just like reprogrammed it like you'd reprogram a computer. And from that point forward, I was happier. I was excited about life again. I felt like I had a purpose and I was grateful for the things I did have.
Hey girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlin, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season three of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hey everyone, before you hit that 30-second forward button, a quick discussion. A long time ago, I went through a very difficult period, and the book When Things Fall Apart by Pema Chodron was so important to me during that period that to this day, I still give that book to people when they're going through a difficult time. I've heard from a lot of you that this show has been a big help as you've gone through difficult times, and a way for you to give this show to other people who are going through difficult times is to be a supporter. You can go to oneyoufeed.net/support and make a monthly contribution. $2, $5, any amount helps. You'll get some great gifts if you do, but in addition, and more importantly, you get the satisfaction of knowing that you are passing on something that has been important and useful to you to other people. You're making sure that the show goes on, that all episodes are available for free, and that we continue to put out the content that we do that has helped you and many other people. So go to oneyoufeed.net/support now and make a contribution, and you are able to keep the show for yourself and as a gift to other people. Thanks so much, as always, for your support.
And here's the rest of the interview with Justin Stenstrom.
Now, did you do this hypnosis pretty much, like you were saying, via CDs, or did you visit a hypnotist?
I did 99% of this on my own. Just I got some MP3s online. It was, you know, by a guy by the name of Dr. Andrew Dobson. He is, I believe, a New Zealand hypnotist and one of the best, in my opinion, out there. The thing that's really cool about this too, it's not like it's super expensive. It's not like you got to drop hundreds of thousands of dollars to get it. MP3s online, even if it's this guy or anybody else, are typically like 10 or 15 bucks. And you have that and you own it for life. You can use it whenever you want. And again, it's like 20 to 30 minutes of just listening to an MP3 and you plug in, you know, your headphones, your earbuds, go to a quiet room, you know, dim the lights, maybe even shut them off. And, you know, for 20 to 30 minutes, you have a professional hypnotist in your ear teaching you how to overcome some major problems.
Now, do you listen to the same one day after day, or is it like a rotating cast? I'm just kind of curious, you know, what you did.
So I just listen to the same exact one every single day. And it's not like, you know, it gets like old, or, you know, I'm thinking like, you know, or people may be thinking like, oh, maybe that'll get old, or you'll kind of get boring after doing it, because it actually doesn't. Because like I said, it's not that like you're in that state of mind where you're consciously listening to it. It's a very weird state of mind, actually. You don't actually really remember what's being, like, you'll remember bits and pieces, but you won't remember like the entirety of what you're listening to. You'll remember like bits and pieces. And then at the end of it, when it's kind of funny, you know, you're in a hypnotic state when at the end of it, it's called like the wake up. So he has like, you know, the countdown where you're the induction, where you're going from 10 to 1. On the wake up, it's like 1 to 5. And then by the time you hit 5, you're fully alert, fully awake, and back into a conscious state of mind. So you know you've actually done like a successful hypnotic session when you don't really remember the entire of the entire 20, 30 minutes of what's been said, but you wake up when the guy says 5, and like you're fully conscious when you're like, you know, like the music's kind of playing in the background, because they have like kind of relaxing yoga type music typically in the background. So you hear the background, you can kind of hear him, you know, talking up to or leading up to that 5. And then when he hits 5, it's like you're fully conscious. And that's when you know it worked. That's when you know you had a good hypnotic session, because you're fully up by the time you hit 5. So it doesn't get like boring, doesn't get like repetitive at all, because you don't even actually really listen to it throughout the session.
Yeah, I've heard and read studies that say like certain people are able to be hypnotized and other people just aren't. Like there's some sort of, you know, there's lots of different studies about, is it a genetic thing? But I'm just kind of curious, because I've never really tried it. And so it might be something I check out and see how it works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the number is something like 90 to 95% of people are hypnotizable. There's like a small percentage, maybe 5 to 10% of the population that can't be. And then I think like maybe, I'm just kind of guessing it. That's kind of the numbers I'm pretty sure of around that range. Mm-hmm. But I think it might be like 50 to say 75% are highly hypnotizable, and the other like remaining percentage are like people that you got to kind of work with and play around with to actually get it to work.
Yep. You host a podcast. I'd be interested in what some of your favorite guests have been, or maybe some of the key learnings you've gotten out of doing the show. I know that's a hard question. People ask me that and I'm like, I can't answer that, but pull a few out of some things that really stood out to you.
Yeah, definitely, man. There's so many, as you know, man, there's so many different cool guests that you have on, and just you, I mean, you literally learn something from every guest, I think, or you have like this unique conversation, and this podcasting is amazing in general, but you have these amazing conversations like week to week with these incredible people. And for me, especially, I think for you too, as well, if I'm not mistaken, you have like kind of a mix of people, and kind of it's awesome in that way where you get to just like mix things up and constantly like play off your interests and what you know, are interested in yourself. And for me, I get to learn something new every single time. I've had guys like Robert Greene on the show, who is, you know, obviously, you know, super, super successful author. I'm an author of a couple books myself. So I look up to someone like that who's had like 5 international, you know, New York Times bestselling books. And I've read every single one of his books. He's one of my favorite authors. But I got to pick his brain about like his strategies for writing. I was asking him about, you know, if you've ever thought of writing a novel, you know, like a Game of Thrones kind of thing. And just cool, like the little things I picked up off him. I also had a guy, the Shark Tank guy, Kevin Harrington, on a few months back. Really cool. I mean, this guy's like a, you know, $500 million net worth kind of guy. I mean, he's friends with Mark Cuban and all those other dudes. So I have so much respect for a guy like that. And again, picking his brain and talking business strategy with somebody like that, I mean, that's priceless. It's to do something like that would cost like thousands of dollars if you wanted to have like a one-on-one, you know, phone consultation with one of these guys, and to get them on the show and basically just pick their brains and ask them questions that I would ask them if I were paying them money is just like one of the coolest things in the world. But as far as like a lesson goes, man, for all the guests that come on the show, at this point we've had hundreds of guests, but the common theme that I think is recurring in everyone that comes on the show is the sort of failure or rejection that they faced early on in their career or their life that really propelled them into unbelievable success. Like every guest I've had on has had unbelievable, not just one either, by the way, usually it's like multiple different failures or rejections, or, you know, they did these things in the beginning that they thought were going to go great and they fell flat on their face. And what separates them from all the other people that don't make it or aren't as successful as them is that they use it to kind of fuel themselves, to use that as like a motivator for their success. So they just, instead of, you know, that project failing or a big failure in their life, either their personal life or their business life, they use that and just, you know, do 10 times better than they ever thought they were going to do before. And they just constantly carry that around as like a motivator and something that pushes them and drives them. So that's one of the big things I learned, and kind of that's reiterated every time someone.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Comes on.
Yeah, I agree. Getting to talk to all these different people and ask whatever questions you have about them and follow your interests is part of the reason I love doing this so much. I mean, it's probably the top reason I love doing it, of course, except being with Chris. I want to talk a little bit about depression again, because you've talked about NLP, you've talked about hypnosis. You've also talked about exercise, diet, and supplements. And I'm kind of interested in the supplement piece, but I also want to talk about exercise and diet. It's one of those things, it's such a boring topic on one hand to be like, well, if you're feeling crappy, take care of your body. And yet over and over and over, every guest, all the studies, everything points to the fact that if you want to feel good, you've got to take care of yourself physically. Otherwise, you're going to feel crappy. It just depends what, you know, as a guest recently said, what flavor of crap it's going to be. So, but I'd be interested supplement-wise, what is it that you found that helped you depression, that helped you with depression?
Yeah, so there's a few big ones out there. And the thing with me too is I'm a very kind of safe, cautious type of guy. So anything I'll recommend or anything I'll put into my body personally is something that I've done a ton of research on, or things that I know is 100% safe and it's not going to do like any crazy side effects or do me any harm personally. I wouldn't experiment with any prescription drugs. For instance, when I was, you know, first went to the doctors for this kind of thing back in the day, they immediately tried to throw a bunch of antidepressants and anti-anxiety medication at me, but I didn't want to go that route. I didn't want to have to depend on something like a lot of other people. Not like, you know, saying I was better than anyone else or, you know, I have like some kind of superiority because I didn't take it, but it was just more like a personal preference for me. I was kind of honestly kind of scared of going down that route. So I chose like, you know, a safer alternative. And a few of the ones that really helped me out, a few of the ones that stick out, fish oil, and especially like a triple strength fish oil, one that has a lot of DHA and EPA in it is really, really good. If you just, I mean, look into a little bit of research into that, they say the balance between omega-6s and omega-3s, especially in the Western diet, is unbelievably high. I forget the exact number, but it's like 20 times more than it should be, like ratio wise. I think it should be like, two or three to one, maybe like omega 6 to omega 3. In the Western diet, it's something ridiculous, like 26 to 1. Like, we consume so much more omega 6s than omega 3s. So that, I mean, that just throws the entire body, especially the brain, out of flux. Like, the brain is made up of fatty tissue, fatty acids. That's what, you know, we run on. That's kind of our juice in the brain. And when you have an imbalance of that, it's just like tipping the scales, almost like throwing like, you know, lava or acid in your brain instead of like, you know, instead of like getting blood and, you know, clean blood. It's like you're dumping like, you know, just crap and waste into the brain constantly. And so you're going to have these problems. It's like, it's no wonder that we have so much inflammation. It's no wonder that we have problems like tendonitis. It's no wonder that we have so much problems with anxiety, depression, just all sorts of problems in, you know, health problems associated with inflammation. And fixing that balance is one of the most important things. So just consuming a fish oil supplement every single day, I recommend, like I said, a triple strength one. And I actually consume it 2 to 3 times a day. So it's like 1,000 milligrams. Of EPA and DHA combined, and I'll take even 2 to 3 times of it, which is actually not as high as you might think. But, you know, people might be like, oh, why are you taking a one per day supplement 2 to 3 times a day? If you do the research on it, doctors actually will recommend somewhere to like 3 to 4 grams or 3 to 4,000 milligrams of fish oil a day. So just taking a fish oil will typically help anybody out, and especially in the Western diet, but it'll help you out in a number of things, especially with like inflammation. Especially with things like any kind of brain-related health problem, it is huge. Vitamin D is another one as well, especially if you live in a climate that doesn't get enough sunlight, or if you're in like in Boston, where I'm from, you have like fall and the winter seasons where we don't get enough sun. And so we have plenty of sun right now. It's 80 degrees outside, as I mentioned to you earlier. Beautiful day. Spring and summertime here is perfect. I get plenty of vitamin D. I don't even supplement typically with any supplement in the spring or summer, but come fall and wintertime, I'm taking probably 2 to 5,000 IUs of a high quality vitamin D supplement a day. As you probably heard, there's something called seasonal depression. Vitamin D is huge in hundreds of processes in the body. I mean, it works in just a number of different things. It helps regulate your hormones. It helps with brain function. It helps with your heart. I mean, it just helps across the board, obviously bone health. But vitamin D is something that we typically don't get enough of. And just supplementing with that will also do wonders. Another thing is a B complex, which is kind of like the stress vitamins. You have your B1s, your niacin, your B6, B12, which is huge in a lot of things. And getting a supplement that has like all of these in good quantity of it, like a 50 milligram minimum for across the board B vitamins is very, very helpful. And then the other thing, the last kind of very safe and very effective sort of alternative to like prescription drugs or sort of like the natural route to combating depression is a mineral called magnesium, which I'm sure a lot of you have heard of, but maybe not as many of you know why it's so effective. Magnesium is one of the most important and overlooked minerals in the body. This one actually plays a role in over 300 processes in the body. And the research on magnesium for depression alone is astounding once you start to look into it. A lot of people who are depressed are actually 80% of the American population is estimated to be deficient in this mineral, in magnesium, which is a huge number. Like 4 in 5 people are low in this and don't get enough on a day-to-day basis of it. So most people will do well supplementing with magnesium. But people, especially with depression, have an overwhelming propensity to be deficient in magnesium. And magnesium's importance on the brain and how the brain functions is incredible. It just like the 300 processes that it works on in the body, many of those work in the brain and they help regulate, like I said, hormones. They help with the neurotransmitters in the brain. They help with like amino acid production and just facilitate so many different processes and help the brain function optimally. And also, as it turns out, it's really good for things like anxiety and stress as well.
So what kind of magnesium? There's like 4 different types you can get when you go to, you know, I think there's magnesium citrate and there's different ones. Is there a particular kind that's recommended?
Yeah, the one I take, the one I actually recommend is magnesium citrate, like you said. And There's a number of different ones you can use. Typically, the ones that end in ATE, like an 8, they're combined with an amino acid, which makes them better absorbed. And they actually are, you know, what, like if you take a 200 milligram, say, magnesium, you're going to absorb most of that magnesium, as opposed to you absolutely want to stay away from like an oxide or anything like that that's not an 8. So glycinate is another good one. Taurate is also pretty good, but my personal preference is magnesium citrate, and it's because it's easy on the stomach, it's best absorbed, and you're getting kind of like what you pay for. Like you're getting overall basically what it says in it. If it says 200 milligrams, you're getting most of that 200 milligrams. Or if you take an oxide, there's a lot of studies out there that say it can actually be bad for you if you take the wrong form of it.
Excellent. Well, Justin, thank you so much for taking the time to come on. I've really enjoyed the conversation.
Hey, Eric, I really appreciate you having me on, man. So thank you.
Yes. Take care.
Thanks. You too.
Bye.
Bye.
If what you just heard was helpful to you, please consider making a donation to the One You Feed podcast. Head over to oneyoufeed.net/support.